Welcome to the official podcast of the Hoffeld Group. Your host is the CEO and Chief Sales Trainer of the Hoffeld Group, David Hoffeld.
Welcome to the official podcast of the Hoffeld Group, where we provide you with powerful sales insights that are based upon proven science and will help you sell more. I'm your host, the CEO and Chief Sales Trainer at the Hoffeld Group, David Hoffeld.
And today we are joined by two very special guests, Steve Anderson and Dave Stein, who together authored the thought-provoking new book, Beyond the Sales Process, 12 Proven Strategies for a Customer-Driven World. Steve Anderson is the president and founder of Performance Methods, Inc., a sales performance consulting and training organization that delivers customized solutions to industry-leading organizations around the globe. And Dave Stein is a competitive sales strategist and expert on hiring salespeople and managers. He wrote the Amazon best-selling book, How Winners Sell, and he's the host of Sales and Marketing Management Magazine's Sales Executive Series of monthly webinars. Steve and Dave, it's great having you join us today.
Thanks for having us, David.
We're really good to be here, David.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I want to jump right into some of the ideas that you both put forth in your book. And I guess maybe the first question I would have for you is that in the book, you both write that we are in a customer-driven world and we really need to engage buyers differently. You write about how we need to engage them, take a more comprehensive approach and engaging them before the sale, of course, during the sale, and then after the sale. So I guess I want to ask, what inspired this somewhat unique perspective, and how did you come to the realization that this book needed to be written?
Okay, so Steve here, David, and I'll start us off, and I think Dave will have some comments on this one too. This is really a good question, and it's not one that we've been asked by very many people so far. So if I go back to the beginning when I started in sales, the message to me, David, was close business, young man, and that's about all we care about. And while those weren't the words, those were very much the transmitted intentions of my elders. And so the focus was effectively from the time the customer said go to the time the customer said where do I sign. And since that time, as I have observed a number of companies, and many of these are clients for my firm, Performance Methods, Inc., or PMI, as most people call us, I just observed, and I think it's more true today than ever before, David, that it doesn't have to be that way. As a matter of fact, it doesn't need to be that way, and it shouldn't be that way. And there are companies that are doing things very differently with the customer. And so as Dave Stein and I, and while Dave and I have known each other for some time, we started our partnership and our friendship, I would say, in the tech industries. We work very closely together in a New York-based software company. That's really how we met. As we were talking about how things were changing and needed to change, I guess one of the observations was, you know, things are different. And this idea of let's just work the sales process and work it again and again and again, this just isn't working real well for a lot of people because, you know, I heard people say, oh, I'm working my sales process and I'm not getting the results I want. And yet it seemed like while some sellers were always, it's almost as if they were starting afresh every time a customer chose to engage with them to buy something else, there were others that were different, and there were others that were finding a different way to engage the customer. And what we determined, Dave and I, is that the differences, okay, had a lot to do with what was happening before the customer said, I'm ready to buy something, and after the customer said, I just bought something, and now I'd like you to make your promises come true. So that was where our thinking was. We didn't think anybody had written this book, and we could either remain silent and choose to say nothing or perhaps take a leadership position. And Dave Stein, I guess that's what we were thinking. You might want to add to that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Some sellers always seem to start the next sale as though there's never been one before. In other words, there's no repeat business. There's no allegiance. There's no loyalty on the part of the customer. And that's something that we noticed. You know, you asked David, how did you come to realize, realize that you needed to write the book, something like that. And that kind of ties into what Steve said. Well, the first thing I realized I needed to write the book because Steve Anderson called me up and told me that he wanted to write a book, always did. And, I was just delighted and felt very blessed that I was the person he wanted to write a book with. And he did some arm twisting and my arm actually hasn't totally straightened out yet. And that was 2 years ago. But, having come from a position of being an analyst looking at sales training companies, sales training methodologies, sales effectiveness programs, I kept noticing again and again how many times sales trainers were getting RFPs from existing customers as if they never had done business with them before. So I'm sitting there going, okay, so sales training company ABC has company XYZ as their customer, and they've been training them for 3 years, and XYZ is now issued an RFP. They call me in to help them find a new sales training company. So I started to scratch my head going, well, what are these sales training companies doing wrong, or what aren't they doing right that's compelling their very customers and clients to basically give up on them after 3 years and go look for someone else? And so when Steve called me in March of 2014, this was on my mind. I just thought it was a pretty lousy situation that the very companies that are supposed to be teaching and training and educating salespeople how to sell, how to build long-term, mutually beneficial and profitable relationships, they themselves are basically getting not kicked out, but you know, it's up for grabs after they've had a client for a period of time. So I thought that was you know, really, really profound to me. And when Steve approached me, that was one of the things that I think Steve and I discussed back and forth, and we realized that we do have a unique perspective. Steve, from having worked with all of these global companies, me from having come from not only a sales position, but having run a sales effective analyst firm for all those years and seeing things from a different perspective. That's what got us together on this book, David.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think you both really point out a number of issues that I'm sure a lot of our listeners are, as you're both were commenting on why you wrote the book, I'm sure our listeners are finding themselves nodding their heads and saying, yeah, me too. And I think that's one of the distinct features of your book that I appreciated was its focus, and that you are focused on the customer. Too often in sales, we focus on how we're selling, and we study salespeople, and we forget about the ones that really matter, and that is the customer. So I want to maybe delve into that and focus on the different stages that your book talks about, before the sale, during, and then, of course, after the sale, how to position ourselves as salespeople effectively. So, Steve, let me ask you, you know, one of the really thought-provoking ideas that really struck me in the book comes from a salesperson that you quote, where she mentions that she does her best selling when the customer isn't buying. I thought, what a fascinating idea. So maybe can you talk about that idea and maybe share some practical strategies or steps that our listeners can deploy to really guide them in fostering productive relationships with customers before they're in buying mode?
Yeah, David, well, first of all, that is one of my favorite quotes from, I guess I've been in this the sales performance business, the sales executive several times before this, but for 17 years now. And I distinctly, this is one of my personal clients, and I distinctly remember her saying this. And I knew, and I know this person well enough to know what she meant. And so we got into a dialogue. But just for the listeners, because I think this is a very insightful quote. I don't want to take any credit for it because she said it. But when she said it, my antenna went up, and I certainly deeply appreciate the fact that yours did because you're asking this question. If we think about what is happening all too often, salespeople, and when I say salespeople, David, I'm talking about, you know, inside sales, I'm talking about, you know, customer-facing salespeople that are in the territory, and I'm talking about account managers. And I think too often we look at those three functions and say, you know, these are different people, they do different things, and maybe they'll talk at the water fountain, but basically if they all hit their numbers, then I'm pretty well off as a senior sales exec. I think the reality from a customer perspective is that I'm tired of having three people from the same company talk to me on any given day and engage with me as though they represent three very different companies. And I think customers in 2016 expect more than that. So whether we call it, gosh, I don't know, business development, sales, account management, you know, the sales enablement, sales engagement, I mean, pick your favorite words, but I think the customer's expectation, the bar is higher from the perspective of a lot of customers. And so what this particular individual was referring to was the great difficulty in finding out what matters most to a customer when that RFP has either hit the street or just about to hit the street. And if we think about what's happening there, David, you know, we're trying to gain mind share at the most difficult time when people are naturally at their most defensive. And quite candidly, if I were the customer, and the only time that the salesperson, and I've actually experienced this recently in a B2C, with me being the C, the consumer, situation, you know, you call me and you leave me these messages and it sounds like you love me very much, but it's because it's a renewal time. And so I just think that the savvy B2B buyer, and most of them are much more savvy in 2016 than ever before, I think they expect more than that. They know it's disingenuous. And so when we sell before the customer's buying, we're in an environment where the barriers are not so high, where it's easier to build relationships based on trust and credibility. And I think customers perceive the authenticity and the genuine nature of that.
Yeah, I think that's really an important takeaway from your book. There's many, which we'll get into a few of them, but getting in there before they're ready to buy gives you really an unfair advantage over your competitors, and it also can allow you to better serve that customer. But Dave, let me pose this question to you, because I want to push back a little bit here, because I'm sure our listeners are saying, you know, that sounds great, right? And that makes sense, but now, their customers are busy. They're overwhelmed with a lot of issues and challenges and deadlines. So before they're ready to buy, before they're in that buying mode, as you discuss in the book, how do salespeople give those customers a compelling reason to enter into the dialogue with them before they're ready to buy? So what are some strategies that you can give our listeners that might help them engage buyers effectively before the sale?
Okay, so yeah, good question. So Steve and I talked a lot about this, and again, you know, we have parallel but very different backgrounds. The complementary, the writing of this book was something smoother, friendlier, and I guess effective and efficient past my wildest imagination ever writing a book with somebody. But we do come from different backgrounds, and we do have different experience sets. But we agreed, based on our observations, that before the sale, before there's meat on the table, is precisely the best time to enter dialogue with a customer. And things have changed a lot of ways. I mean, Steve mentioned, you know, 2008, you know, the big the beginning of the last tough economic recession. Buyers are much, much more well-informed. I mean, as we hear, we've been hearing about this now for 6 years, 7 years, however long it's been. But it really has changed the way buyers buy. They're a lot smarter. They're a lot more strategic. They have a lot more power over sellers. There are a lot more sellers and a lot more supply than there is demand. So when customers are facing issues and pressures and challenges and competitors and demands from their customers, when that pressure is on for them, that can be the time that they're most open to new ideas. Before they've even thought about, oh, let's buy a widget, or let's get some technology, or let's buy some sales training services, or let's do this or do that, they're just at that point deluged with issues, with challenges, with, in some cases, opportunities. But deluged is the best word. I mean, lots and lots of senior executives that I talk to, that I know Steve talks to, that's what their life is like. So let's for a moment take that as a given. Okay, no deal on the table. They haven't thought about buying anything yet. If we can get to them when that pressure's on and provide them with ideas, with examples, with experiences that our customers, other customers, older customers, existing customers have had, understanding their company, understanding the industry that they live in, more importantly, understanding the industry into which they sell and service, to be able to build the credibility to say to somebody, hey, David, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think your company right now and the industry that you're selling into is facing these three major challenges, A, B, and C. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the impact that it could be having on your business is D, E, and F. And if you were able to overcome those challenges, not all of them, but some of them, the results might be G, H, and I. Do I have that about right? And if I've done my homework and I've studied you as a target customer and I understand how your business runs and I understand the market and the customers you sell to, I am going to score some points, and that scoring some points is the beginning of the before the sale. It's the beginning of me establishing credibility, enabling the customer to sit back for one moment and not, perhaps not to me and not out loud, but to themselves go, there's somebody different right here in front of me. This person's done their homework. They have some ability to have vision into what my issues and challenges are. And you know what? I'm going to give them 5 minutes of my time. And that's where this all begins. That's how it begins and where it all begins.
Well said. I think that's a big takeaway from your book overall, is to really rethink selling beyond the sales process, to the point of the title, right? To focus on the beginning. Yeah. How do we position ourselves effectively? And I think that segues nicely into another area that I wanted to ask about. And Steve, let me ask you, in the book, you talk about differentiation. And I know this is a hot topic for salespeople, because we're all trying to differentiate ourselves. To Dave's point earlier, you know, there is more supply than there is often demand. It's a hyper-competitive marketplace. It's very challenging. So differentiation is key. And you talk about in the book that it's really a function of a discovery, a strong alignment, and positioning. And I thought that was an important takeaway that I wanted to maybe flesh out a little bit. So could you explain those three components of discovery, alignment, positioning for our listeners, and then also maybe share how they work together to really enable a meaningful differentiation?
Yeah, love to, David, because I think you've just landed on one of the key findings in the book. Okay, so let me start with the word that you used, the guest of honor of the sale, which is the customer. And you know, Dave and I have been in this business long enough to have each sampled, in a few cases together, but and in other cases separately, lots of different approaches. And I would certainly say, there's never been a sales book or there's never been a sales training course run that didn't have some good stuff in it, all right? But my life experience has been that too often there is almost a perception given, if not intentional, then subliminal, that the customer is the necessary evil required to make the sale. And that's not the way Steve Anderson sees it. That's not the way PMI sees it. And that's certainly, in my opinion, not the way my buddy Dave Stein sees it, because we've commiserated on this and collaborated many, many times. And I think it's as easy to illustrate, David, is personal experience, right? I mean, you know, we've all been to the mall and somebody jumps out from behind the kiosk and, you know, hey, my perfume is better, or my mobile phone is better, or this is better, that is better. Would you, you know, my way to whiten your teeth, I don't know, it's just unbelievable. You know, and you just feel assaulted, and I'm just going to use the word violated, and you feel, at least I do, and it's like, man, is this all there is, really? And yet, I really hate to say this, and I don't feel good saying this, but I think right now, around the globe in business-to-business world, I think this is happening in thousands of places where people are walking in and they are selling exactly the way that I was taught many years ago by a firm that was considered tops in class at equipping salespeople to be successful. And that was, you know, I'm here, it's all about me, it's all about my company, let's talk about me, and if there's any time left, then maybe we'll talk about you. Personally, I think it is offensive when somebody starts telling me the buyer, you the buyer, here's how different I am, because David, they're trying to capture preference when they have not yet captured mind share. So what Dave Stein and I observed is, hold on a minute, whatever the sales process is, let's go beyond that. Let's get beyond the sales process. If that's the what, how are these people doing it? And so, David Hoffeld, what we get real excited about is this discovery, no pun intended, what the best of the best are doing, regardless of their sales process, is they are doing deep discovery around the opportunity. What does the customer really care about? And as they do that, they become connected. Because when you have that conversation with the customer, and it's all about them, not all about me and my company and my product, you become aligned or connected. And then you earn the right to capture a bit of mind share and do a bit of positioning around fit. And what we have found is that in the vast, vast majority of sales wins, discovery preceded alignment. Alignment preceded positioning. And sure, these things are pervasive throughout. No one would disagree with that. But sequentially, differentiation occurs best when it's the result of having done the discovery, done the homework, being connected, aligned, trust-based relationships, and positioning. And I'll tell you, one way to prove that it works, one way is to read the book, because there's case studies in there of people that do exactly this, real companies, real people, and their real customers. They're all on LinkedIn. But if you reverse that, David, and if you say, okay, what can go wrong if I go in the opposite order? In the opposite order, Steve Anderson says to David Hoffeld, David, I want to tell you what makes me better than anybody you're likely to talk to. And now that you understand what makes me better, let me tell you what I do. I think you might want to know what it is I do. And now, would you like to know a little bit about me and my business? And could I understand a little bit about you and your business? And yeah, let me try to find out more about your requirements. And David Hoffeld, I just went in reverse order. I just went from differentiation, here's why you should prefer me, to positioning, here's why you should think about me, to alignment, here's why you should care about me, to discovery, here's why you should talk to me. And it just doesn't work. And so what we believe is that sellers can go beyond practically any sales process with these four strategies, and we believe the order matters. And if discovery precedes alignment, and those two precede positioning, you're in a great spot to begin to differentiate the uniqueness of the value that you bring to that guest of honor, the customer.
Yeah, I think that's another important takeaway here, just for our listeners to evaluate, because, Steve, to your point, there is a unfortunate but a growing trend to do the opposite oftentimes. We fall into this almost narcissistic way of selling that is so focused on the seller that it forgets about the buyer and analyze. Am I really focusing on the customer? And I'm building off of that focus to make sure that they're always the star of the show and I'm providing value at every stage, which I think is another key point in your book, that it's always about value creation for the customer, regardless of whether it's before the sale, during, or after the sale. And I think maybe I want to focus for just a moment on after the sale, because that was one thing that really struck me as I read through your book, and you have numerous chapters dedicated to that, because I think that really might be the low-hanging fruit that a lot of times as salespeople, we have really ignored or not leveraged strategically or effectively. And so, Dave, maybe let me ask you, strategically engaging buyers after the sale can really grow that relationship from just a transaction into a partnership. But for many salespeople, this is, unfortunately, probably maybe a new idea, or at least one they haven't put into practice yet. because they oftentimes rarely interact with existing customers until those customers again signal they're ready to buy, as you mentioned earlier, and you start the process over again. So really, what are some strategies that salespeople can use after the sale is finalized to really expand that relationship?
Yeah, so there's dead space. You're right. Listeners, as we were preparing for this call, we actually had to dial up on another system because there was dead space. We kept cutting out. And so the word dead space is on my mind now. And so that dead space from the time the customer signs until the customer needs to buy again is a time, it's part of our engage, win, and grow before, during, and after the sale. That grow part, growing the relationship, growing the value, co-creating value, collaborating with your customer on realizing the value that was promised during the sale, that part is not always, but almost always forgotten. It's just sacrificed. That opportunity is squandered away by most salespeople, most sales methodologies, and most sales training companies, which is why, back to the beginning of this conversation, why company XYZ came to me and said, we've had company ABC as our sales trainer, and we're looking for someone else. Well, why did that happen? Because company ABC sold them, they delivered the sales training, and then that dead space, that's what happened. So the book, in the third section of the book, which is Engage, Win, Grow, or it's after the sale, there are four strategies. And the three that I just want to quickly talk about that will help the listeners understand what Steve's and my approach is, the what you're supposed to do during that time, and deep down in the bowels of each chapter, the how you're supposed to do it, starts with realizing the value that you promised, that you committed to deliver to that customer. That's why they signed your contract, because whether it was an ROI or a business case that they were going against, or they had some significant challenge, difficult customers, threatening competitors, some opportunities out there in the marketplace, there was value that was promised. So the first thing we need to do is work jointly with that customer to realize the value, to meet and exceed those expectations that we helped the customer set. We didn't necessarily set it for them, but we were part of that, the customer setting those expectations. So realizing the value, and actually it's strategy number 9. And strategy number 10 is validating the impact. So measuring the success with your customer. And we say measuring the success, I like to believe that measuring the success is measuring with real numbers, down to the, five points to the right of the decimal place. The customer was looking to achieve a certain degree of growth in their Asia Pacific and Latin America markets, and they engaged with us to help them do that. And these were their targets, and this is what we achieved together. Here's how we did it. Here's how it breaks down by function, by department, by initiative, by sub-strategy, by tactic, and measuring the success of the customer cements the relationship that you have with them. You are joint owners of that success. And by the way, another assumption is you better darn well deliver on that promise and achieve or exceed the customer's expectations, or else they're going to be out there sending out an RFP looking for your replacement, pretty soon. And then chapter 11, or strategy 11, is adapting the approach, applying the lessons learned with the customer. So basically what you're doing now is you're rolling this out. This has become part of their standard everyday business process, their methodologies, their approach, their strategies for achieving what they want to, and this becomes the way that they live and breathe going forward. So what you've done now in that period of time from when the deal was closed and either your product was delivered or your service was implemented, that's not time for you to then go and quick, you know, go on LinkedIn and look for a bunch of new customers to go after, although you obviously need to be doing that as well, okay, but unless you're a dedicated, you know, kind of national account or key account or strategic account manager where that customer is your primary focus. But my point is, if you're not doing those things, realizing the value, validating the impact, and adapting the approach with your customer, when it comes time for them to buy again, you're not going to have a preferred position. And that's really what we want. We don't want them to send out another RFP. We don't want them going on Google and looking for who are your competitors because they may have a better shot at having more success next time. Now, certainly there are companies, and they are, you know, in Europe, they have to go to tender every 3 years. Government agencies have to send out an RFP even though they may love their supplier. We know that that happens. But the bottom line for most of us is during that quiet period, if we aren't actively, proactively collaborating, co-creating value with our customers, measuring it, and driving it through the organization, then that time has been squandered, and you might as well just have said goodbye to the customer after the contract was signed and without any expectation of ever seeing them again.
I think that really is the low-hanging fruit that we could all do better at if you're in sales. So I'd encourage our listeners to really evaluate how effective are you after the sale. And I think their book lays it out nicely, as Dave mentioned. And again, I would highly recommend everyone in sales, whether you're a salesperson, you're a sales leader, a business owner, this book is very thought-provoking and it's very practical. It'll give you real-world strategies, as Dave and Steve have laid out here already today, that will really help you be more effective, better serve your buyers, and definitely generate more sales. So I would highly recommend you pick up their book. In fact, in my opinion, it's one of those few sales books that's really too important to ignore. Final few minutes together, I wanted to ask you, maybe from the perspective of our listener who right now is saying, you know, this is great. They're only thinking of changes they can make. They want to nurture the relationships with their customers before the sale, of course, during and then after. But they're wondering, how can they have the time to do this? You know, they already have quotas they have to hit. They have, you know, ever-mounting responsibilities that have been given them by their company. And they only have so much time. So how do they decide which customers they're going to invest their time in? What advice can you give that person right now who's wondering, how do I select the right customers to get the highest ROI on my time investment with them?
Hey Steve, why don't you talk about existing customers, and then when you're done, I'll talk about which new customers do we focus on with the little time as salespeople that we have. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, hey, that's a great idea, Dave. David, so let me start us off going back to the question that you posed today just a couple minutes ago, which is, well, this ought to be low-hanging fruit after the sale. Why is it that we don't make more out of it? And I would just offer you an observation and then a direct answer to this question. So my observation is that there's an awkward dichotomy that occurs at the end of the sale. And I say this as a seller and as a consultant in this business. When the sale happens, the pressure and the stress of the salesperson, and I feel sure everybody listening, including the three of us that are doing the talking, can relate to this. Wow, it's done. I got the deal. You know, let's celebrate. So as our stress and pressure is being alleviated, the customer's is really just beginning. And I think this magic set of moments causes a bit of a disconnect. Because up to this point in time, the customer has basically been involved in a selection process. I'm not suggesting there's no stress in that. There certainly is stress in that. But if you think about the lines crossing, you know, the seller is so stressed. We've all been there. You know, I've got to win this business. It's a must win, this and that. Well, now the customer has to make that value occur. And so my answer to this question, David, is the following. Past proven value is the gift that keeps on giving. What the heck am I talking about? As soon as the customer makes the commitment and the seller delivers on the value, and by the way, I think this is exciting stuff, right? Why do I want to hang around, David Huffeld? I'll tell you why. Because as soon as my customer realizes the value, I begin to accrue past proven value. And past proven value is free once it's created. So why in the world wouldn't we want to be talking with the customer about it? Because we're celebrating success, success of the customer and success with us. Now, can 100% of the salespeople talk to 100% of their customers about past proven value? No, they can't. And here's my practical advice. Most of us will look at our, quote, territory. Well, however many clients, customers there may be, and we're going to find that 10 to 20% probably represent 80 to 90% of the revenue. Start with those guys. Start with those people that don't just want to take from you. And by the way, I don't think the customer's always right, but they are always the customer. But which of those customers, David, really consider you to be strategic and key to their business? And then begin the dialogue. Something like, hey, look, I'm putting plans together for how we work with you. Let's talk about where we've been, what's gone well. Wow, where have you been successful? What can we do better next time? And I think what the sellers are going to find is those conversations are easy, they're low stress, they're pleasurable, and it really tees us up for that next time. Dave?
So Steve just spoke about existing customers and this concept of past proven value. Actually, that's strategy number 12. No big secrets here. And by the way, any of you listening, you're free to go to beyondthesalesprocess.com and you can enter, just click on preview and you can get the introduction to the book and also a sample chapter. And the introduction to the book contains the central model. It's a graphic that has the before, during, and after, and it has the 12 strategies, and it'll give you a very good sense as you're listening to this what you need to be thinking about. But I just want to take just two more minutes here and talk about how do we focus, and you know, how do you decide which are the right customers to invest in? But these are new customers, net new customers. So you're taking care of your existing ones, but you still have to bring in new ones. If you go back to strategies 1 to 4, and that is you put on your headset of doing your homework and becoming a student of the customer, you're off to a great start. And what you really need to understand, as I said, I think it was the answer to David's first question, a real deep understanding of the industry that your customers are in and the industry that they sell into. So who is your customer's customers? So if you're targeting 50 companies, if you're targeting 100 companies, if you're targeting 200 companies by yourself, you're really never going to get anywhere. You have to immerse yourself in your target market's industry and really begin to understand what issues and what challenges and what opportunities those companies are facing. There are so many tools out there now from, oh my gosh, from LinkedIn and Google Alerts and just Owler, O-W-L-E-R, as so many different kinds of tools that will enable a salesperson to make a determination, which are the 5 companies, which are the 6 or 8 or 10 companies I'm going to focus on over the next two quarters. So you want to ask yourself, which of your customers are willing to go exploring with you about future potential opportunities together? And hopefully you have a competent marketing organization who will bring you sales qualified leads. Many of you don't. Many of you are required to generate your own leads, to do it either through social media or banging on the phone. But now this new trend called account-based marketing, ABM, fits very, very well with what I'm talking about, and that is focusing in on specific companies and sharing with them what you know about them, building credibility, getting them to enjoy or at least be willing to have a conversation with you. And again, I don't want to dismiss the whole idea of social media. I'm much more active than Steve, and that's just fine. I told you we have parallel but different practices and different lives. David Hofeld, you're a Twitter superstar out there as far as your social presence. But once you become adept at social media, you're not going to close any deals with social media. It's not going to do this selling for you, but it will help you determine what those target customers are. How should you spend the little amount of time with which potential customers? And those are some of the strategies that will enable you to make that determination.
Steve and Dave, this has been a fascinating conversation. You've given our listeners so many practical, again, very thought-provoking insights. If our listeners do want to learn more about each of you and your work and, of course, your newest book, Beyond the Sales Process, where can they go?
BeyondTheSalesProcess.com. Steve and I post, there's a blog there, and we're regularly posting. There will be tools that will be available for download. And again, you know, if you want to preview the book, that's the best place to go. We hope you want to purchase the book, you can go right to Amazon, or you can go to Beyond the Sales Process, read about it first, and make your purchase from there. So BeyondTheSalesProcess.com.
Excellent. And if you're listening to this podcast off of our website, we'll have a link to BeyondTheSalesProcess.com right under the podcast. So definitely check that out. Well, Steve and Dave, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
David Hofeld, thanks for having us, and thanks for some very in-depth and insightful questions. It was very clear to me that you put a lot of thought into this, and we appreciate that very much.
Yeah, I like what Steve said. Thanks, David. Great job.
Excellent. Well, again, thank you both so much. And again, special thanks to our guests, Steve Anderson and Dave Stein, for sharing some fascinating and very actionable insights with us. And join us here next time on the Huffo Group podcast. And remember, selling is just too important to be based on anything other than proven science.